This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is one of the things that is a cause of people feeling bewildered and like they're a deer in the headlights when you say to them, love yourself. You're like, what the heck do you mean? Right?
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to this special series we're featuring here on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And, oh, it's my weekend. I hope it's your weekend, too. It's my pleasure to be with you here tonight. Oh, it's so exciting. I am here with one of my favorite teas. I just ordered it. It's called Immortal Tea. Immortal Tea, T-E-A, I think. It's a really cool name. Anyway, I just ordered it. It's fantastic. It's called a Jasmine Pearl. Now, it's a loose tea, so I have to be honest, I'm not one that really does a lot of loose teas, so I really had to take their little recipe card and learn how to make it just right, but their recipe was fantastic. So anyway, it's called Immortal Tea. And it was fabulous, and I love the box, by the way. I think that's what attracted me to it. I don't know. Maybe I'm one of those people just, ooh, that's pretty. Anyway, guys, got to try that one out. That's a great tea. And also, tonight, I am so, so excited. One of my favorite people and guests in the world is here with us tonight. And I reached out to her. I always like talking to her, but I reached out to her specifically because she is an expert in neuroscience knowledge and unifying people's bodies and brains. And I just think right now a lot of us are walking around a little bit hypervigilant or a little bit traumatized or a little bit in shock and surprise. And you know what? Our bodies don't function well when we're stuck in surprise or we're stuck in shock, or some people I've walked around are hypervigilant. Our bodies don't work well. So that's why I invited Sarah Payton. She's an international speaker and facilitator. And she is absolutely passionate, as I said, for weaving together the neuroscience, knowledge, and experiences of healing that unify people's bodies and brains. And she is fantastic at this and helping us understand, you know, how do we turn that fight, flight, or freeze switch off or on, as the case may be, because sometimes we do need it on. I mean, that's why we have the switch, right, Sarah?
Yeah. Yes.
So anyway, thank you, Sarah. Oh, I better tell you guys, she's a certified trainer in nonviolent communication. And she's also on the faculty of Birthing Way Midwifery College and teaching communication. Wow, that's really cool. I love that. And she's an experienced facilitator in family constellation work. And she just speaks internationally. And oh, well, just listen in because she's fabulous. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Oh, I'm so excited because, you know, as I said in my crazy introduction there, you can tell I'm just excited to have you. I've always said the surprise is just the enemy of being competent. You know, all of a sudden everything goes out of your head. But I find that here we are, even 2016, a lot of people I talk to, we're not going to talk politics or election, but I just want to go back through 2016. I've said to people, can you believe it's the end of the year? And I'll say a good 80% of them said, good riddance. This has just been a crazy, crazy year. And so I think we're all just, as I said, in this kind of state of hypervigilance, whether it is the election or the other things that have been going on, but it has been kind of a crazy year.
So true. And our bodies really notice that turmoil. So as we are living in any kind of personal or professional or political turmoil, our bodies take the hit. So it's really nice to know that and be gentle with them. I mean, I think that's always my most number one recommendation as we begin to talk about bodies and health and stress and turmoil is just say yes to your body. Yes, of course you're in shock. Yes, of course you're worried. And that kind of sense that your body has that its messages are being received is the key element that allows bodies to relax out of fight or flight. It's like our bodies need to know that their fight or flight message has been received and is being dealt with.
Wow.
Yeah. So the way we talk to our own bodies is really important.
Now, I want you to, of course, I want you to say that again, because I just felt my body absolutely kind of sink in a good way, you know, just let go in a fabulous way, just hearing you say that. So I want to make sure that everybody get out your pencil and paper, because that was a big one. So we say to ourselves.
Yeah. Of course. But the words, of course, really help us to talk to our bodies, because it helps take us out of the idea that we're supposed to be reassuring our bodies all the time. You know, I mean, what we tend to say is, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Just keep going. You know, those kinds of messages.
Oh, and it's going to and be is a future thing. It's not all right. That implies it's not all right now.
And so it's not, the body, it's like a wave. It's like the body sending a wave of information. And if we send back a wave of information, just as you can imagine with what waves hitting each other, that they make a little ripple, and the water doesn't, you know, get all the way to,
it's like this collision.
Yeah, there's a collision in the body trying to communicate with us and us trying to communicate with the body, when what we really need is for the body's information to be fully received, which is what happens when we say, of course. Of course you're stressed. Of course you're worried. Of course you love this planet. Of course you want to know that everybody who's taking care of important things has a sense of integrity and is deeply grounded in their own morality. Of course, you know, it's like a very different way of being with our body, is to say, of course.
Absolutely, a very different way. That is so wonderful to hear. And I do know, from my own experience with autoimmune, is they always say, manage your stress well, manage being in your body well, because that oftentimes, if the stress can just be that little bit that tips you over into what they term a flare. And so I love that, of course. Now, in another time we had you on, I want you to reflect back, maybe hopefully I don't take you by surprise here, but you used the phrase no wonder, and I love that too. Can you describe how we would use that phrase, no wonder? Because there was something really charming and relaxing about the phrase no wonder.
It's very similar to of course, you know. It, in both places, we're really validating the body's wisdom. One of the things I love the most, I'll come back to no wonder, but one of the things I love the most when we're talking to bodies is to acknowledge what the basis is for the alarm and the upset, that there's a valid basis for alarm that our body is carrying. So many of my clients in the aftermath of the November events who had grown up in households where the male figure was autocratic and didn't listen to feedback. So many of those clients were in trauma states. And we would say to their bodies, do you need acknowledgement that you have lived through power structures before where people were not responsive to feedback? Do you need acknowledgement that you have very good reasons to be alarmed? And that acknowledging the historical basis for our body's upset is hugely calming to the body as well. It also helps to orient the body in time. It gives the body the message that indeed it has a good reason for being alarmed, and we're living in a different time now. So, for example, if somebody has experienced any kind of assault or physical violence of any kind, right? And they feel anxious about going out at night, let's say, for us to say to that body, of course, or coming back to no wonder, no wonder you would be alarmed, body, because would you like some acknowledgement that you have had an experience where your personal choice has been taken away by physical force or violence?
Mm-hmm.
And that lets the body know, oh, my message has been received. Oh, yes, I do have very good reasons. And now, here we are. What action do we need to take to make sure that there's safety and well-being?
I love, oh man, that was just so packed. Where to begin? We had Dr. David Clark on a while ago from the book, So They Say There's Nothing Wrong. And his lovely book is about, very similar to your work, but it's about ACE, childhood trauma, childhood experience, adverse childhood experiences, as well as current experiences and things. And I loved how you said, with these phrases that you have, we reorient the body in time. Because a lot of times they're finding now with autoimmune conditions, some of the seeds were planted from these early childhood traumas.
Yeah, so true.
When I'm always following you and others, because I'm so fascinated this work about how trauma can affect our health, but you said reorient the body in time. That's a fascinating concept to me because oftentimes I'm sure these little things get stuck. And when I have these moments where I recall them or I think about them, I can feel like 4 years old or 8 years old or whatever, you know, it's almost as if I am back in that time. And
yes,
that is so cool that just with these simple phrases, we can acknowledge that time, but we reorient ourselves into this new time with all our new tools and all our new knowledge and all the new people that we have in our world that support us. I love that.
Yeah. And reminding our body, oh, we no longer live in the childhood home. Yeah. The reason that we're so fluid with the body and time is because there are two memory systems in the brain. And one of them timestamps everything. And one of them has no timestamping. The part of the brain that has emotional memory doesn't timestamp that memory. It keeps it alive. It's part of our survival mechanism. So part of the survival mechanism of the body is to track things that seem alarming and to mount an alarm response. And so in order to track what seems alarming and mount the alarm response, timestamping is not helpful.
Right.
It's not helpful, you know, if we're walking on a forest trail and we see a snake, it's not helpful to say, oh, I was frightened by a snake when I was 3. No, you want to get out of the way, you know, you want to get off the mountain trail or up or down or back up, you know, and get out of striking range of a rattlesnake, right? You don't stop and timestamp. So the brain has these two different memory systems for a very good reason. And it's really nice to know that about our bodies, because otherwise we can become convinced that the fear that we feel now is appropriate to now, when maybe it's not. Maybe the fear that we feel now is very appropriate to the home that we grew up in, where there was somebody who would come in and we wouldn't know whether they were drunk or sober. We wouldn't know what kind of violence would ensue. As we begin to acknowledge our body, yes, of course, or no wonder, coming back to no wonder you would be anxious. Yeah, of course, because would you like some acknowledgement that you did have experiences, body, that were very dangerous?
Oh, I love that. I love that. How we can know that that was then and this is now, and we have so many more tools as a grown-up or access to tools, even if we might feel in the moment we personally don't have the tools, but we have access to the knowledge.
And, yeah, sources of support and being loved and loving ourselves and, yeah, so much more.
Now, one thing that I found interesting is that oftentimes we just talk about fight or flight as, you know, like either run or fight, right? But I found some people have a third part to that. There's fight, flight, or freeze. And I think a lot of people, when we are surprised or shocked, and it's outside of ourselves in such a way as the recent events of November, freeze tended to happen. And people were like,
yes,
not familiar with that. They go, oh, well, this isn't fight or flight. but they're like, I don't know what to do. And so let's talk a little bit about the fight, flight, or freeze response and some ways that we can either help ourselves or help people in our world that might, still be a little wondering when surprise or shock happens, how can we work our way through it?
Yes, very beautiful question. So you mentioned fight or flight, which is one channel of the nervous system reactivity. And then you mentioned freeze, which is another channel of nervous system reactivity. And then we have the system of social engagement, which isn't talked about very much yet because Stephen Porges has just in the last 5 or 10 years begun to establish, create research that establishes the existence of this third channel of nervous system state.
Well, let me back up for just a quick second there, Sarah. Social engagement. I've been reading studies about how connections, social connections can help people recover. And it's not therapy or anything. It's just having connections. Is that what we're talking about here as Stephen Porges' third part?
Yes, we totally are. And it's so profound that one of the things that Porges has said in the past is that he believes that therapy is effective because it brings people into connection once a week.
I have to agree with him, and I'm not even a scientist, but I'm like, that makes so much sense. Absolutely. Just having my podcast here and talking, to friends like you, or, beautiful people that I meet along the way, or new people that I meet, new friends. I mean, I so agree. Yeah. So we've got the one connection. We have fight or flight, then we have freeze, and then we have social engagement.
Social engagement.
But let's first off, sorry to interrupt you there, but I was just going, okay, I want to talk about that a little bit too. But let's talk about fight, flight, freeze, and then we'll get into social engagement.
Sure. So when we're alarmed, a whole cortisol cascade begins. Cortisol and adrenaline cascade begins that takes us into fight or flight. So let's say, for example, that there's a national election that gets you worried, right? In that worry, there's cortisol, there's adrenaline, and the body wants to take action. The body wants to be able to do something effective to make the world a better place, to rectify the thing that feels like it may not have gone the way that we want it to go. So there's this like real kind of sense of the need for mobilization. That's what fight or flight is all about, is to mobilize us. If we're fighting, it's to mobilize us to get in there and change things with physical force. If we're fleeing, then it's a mobilization to get the heck out of there, right? Now, with something so massive as a political system and political change, there's a kind of helplessness that can happen.
Well, let me just ask a question here, though, about fight or flight. In my experience, and correct me if I'm wrong, that really can only be sustained for a period of time. The body can't keep going with the adrenaline, cortisol, flooding the system, correct?
No. It's not correct. People can stay in fight or flight for years,
wow.
For decades.
Well, the toll that must take on your body.
It takes such a toll on the body. It takes such a toll on the body that if you take a cigarette smoker's heart and a person who is chronically stressed, then you can't actually tell the difference. The damage to the heart tissue is identical.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and as we're talking about cigarette smoking and connection, then I'm just going to add something else before we go back into fight or flight, which is loneliness also is stressful to the body. Oh. It causes the same damage. It has the same deleterious health impact as cigarette smoking. And this is so important for people who are housebound with chronic illnesses and autoimmune experiences that create more limitation than they would enjoy. They find themselves more socially isolated. So it's really important to begin to take advantage of things like this, where people may be watching us and have a sense that we care about them, have a sense that we're reaching out to them, that they matter to
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. That's why we do this program, is to show people that there are others out there that understand and relate, and there are opportunities. So thank you. Wow, I had no idea somehow in my mind I thought you got this burst. And then over.
I we'll come back to that in just a moment. But the virtual community, the idea of virtual community, you and I are talking together. We're not including people, but there are a lot of programs available on the web now where we can be in video contact with people all across the world, even if we are housebound. So I just want to let your viewers know, please, whatever you can find to create connection and warmth and a sense of being loved in your world, reach for it. Push yourself a little bit to reach for it. Because once you're isolated, it can be really hard to believe that you're worth, that anybody would want to be connected with you, that you're worth anything. And the connections are so rich. You know, having just people being honest about their experience, whatever it is, you know, we matter so deeply and we don't even know. So I just wanted to put that out as encouragement.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, because that is so true. And whether it's through video conferencing or even just phone calls or emails, anything, all sorts of ways to connect nowadays. So, yes, so true. Okay, let's...
So coming back to fight or flight, people can be in states of stress, active stress, for years, and it has an impact on the body. But those people have some sense of agency. Their agency is preserved. They have a sense of being in there and struggling. So like the difference between what kind of stress Barack Obama is experiencing as opposed to what kind of stress Sally Jane, you know, is experiencing in her home with chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, is very different, right? Because somebody who's in the situation of being a mover and shaker in power has a sense of agency. There may be a huge amount of stress running through their system. They may be very alarmed, but they're getting to take action. So they can be in fight and flight. They can stay in fight and flight. Sally Jane, on the other hand, doesn't have a sense that her voice matters in this world sometimes, right? And so for this person, for any person who is in the experiencing any kind of autoimmune or any kind of health limitations or feeling really shy or just like being a regular person in the world and feeling like, oh my God, my voice doesn't matter. You know, I'm one of the, you know, 52% who voted the other way, and look what's happened. I'm even in the majority and my voice doesn't matter, right? For those people, once we have a sense, for me, for you, for anybody, once we have a sense that the agency is not effective, then the body moves to freeze.
Oh.
So, yeah, so part of freeze is helplessness and hopelessness. Part of freeze is also shock, as you named. You named shock earlier. Shock is, of course, extremely important because shock immobilizes us. The idea of shock is that it immobilizes us because we have such a sense of taking a huge blow. The body really doesn't distinguish so much between physical blows and emotional blows. You know, it doesn't know. When something really big and intense happens, the body does not yet know whether we have been mortally wounded and we're bleeding to death. So there's this shutdown that happens with shock, also with helplessness and hopelessness, where the energy of the body, which in fight or flight is out, moving, doing, taking action, being intense, all of a sudden there's a collapse. The energy moves very, very far back, behind, next to the spine, in front of the spine, but far back in the body, there's a heaviness to the limbs. The body begins to collapse. The muscles of the face lose their tone. There's just a feeling of heaviness and frozenness in the face. If you can feel your body at all, which is a part of the shock experience, the sense of feeling the body may go away altogether.
Wow.
So there's just The freeze comes, and the body moves into immobility. So I'll just bring myself slowly back out of that place, because I can just really feel it when I invite myself to go in there, and I invite other people to just notice. You can even kind of do it with your own body, but feel yourself coming back. Because what really brings us out of freeze is a sense of mattering.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we have a sense of mattering to ourselves or others, then our body starts to come out. And what's very interesting, two very important and interesting things about coming out of freeze. One of them is that the body tends to move back through the intensity of fear or the intensity of anger that the body experienced as it was going in. So people, when they're coming out of hopelessness and helplessness, will often come back out into anger, which can be a little alarming. You know, you said, how can we help others to come out of freeze? It can be a little alarming if we're like bringing warmth and tenderness and caring and listening to somebody, and all of a sudden they come out and they're pissed off at us. We need to recognize, right, that this is important. We're like, yes, they've come out of freeze. They're angry at us. I remember that Sarah said this was a good thing.
Keep breathing. Sarah said it's a good thing. Keep breathing.
That's right. That's right. So then a person will come all the way back out. And as they come back out, that often will begin to shake. It even gives me goosebumps to talk about this. There will be a trembling, tremors, shaking, a sense of being really kind of cold without being cold, the body kind of quivering, is a part of coming out of the freeze experience.
Wow.
So just knowing these two things, I think, are really helpful, because both of them can be scary. It can be scary to come out of freeze ourselves and find ourselves so angry. And it can be scary to come all the way into, again, being in social engagement and connection and feeling the tremors begin. So it's nice to have both of those pieces acknowledged.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Because I find so many right now are, to me, not in that state of complete freeze. Probably they're coming out of that, because I'm glad you mentioned that anger part, because I'm seeing a lot of anger here, you know. I'm like, okay, this is fascinating. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
But the nice thing that I've often said about anger, a positive to it, is it can also propel us into making a choice and doing something as well. You know, like, okay, I'm pissed off. You know, what can I do?
There's an engagement.
Yeah, and so get rid of my anger. And I said, no, you know, maybe learn to give it direction. But to me, anger is oftentimes a motivator. And I know even, we'll say, in chronic illness, oftentimes people, I'll say, well, what happened? What was the shift? And I got pissed off. I got tired of being tired all the time. I just wasn't going to take it anymore. I was going to get well. And so oftentimes that pissed off moment is really good thing, isn't it?
It's a very good thing. Anger is protective life energy.
Oh, I love that. Anger is protective.
Protective life energy. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, fear is protective life energy too. Yeah.
Wow.
Our body's trying to take care of us.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I mean, I know you're not amazed because this is your world, but for me...
Oh, I'm amazed. I live in amazement. Yeah.
To me, I'm just disconnected we as human beings living in our bodies can be, but to understand that it's this beautiful integrated system that when we allow it to work the way that it was built to work, it's pretty doggone amazing, isn't it?
And as humans, we were built to be loved. Like, we can't know who we were born to be until we're supported to be fully loved or to fully love ourselves. And that's such an interesting and tricky journey, because so many of us, especially in North America, live in isolation. We've had experiences that humans are not very safe. We've had experiences of being in school and being bullied. We've had experiences of being in the workplace and being bullied. We've had experiences of growing up in homes with adverse childhood experiences that your listeners are so familiar with now. The early trauma, early childhood trauma, how it impacts the body. You know, all of these things are signs that the human race is not a very safe thing to be connected with. And yet, when we can figure out this riddle of how do we get connected, even though we may have some reservations about humans, I always say, let yourself be loved by humans. Let yourself acknowledge that the people around you are flawed, that they are cranky, that they are bitter, that they are sometimes very petty. And notice that even though they are cranky, bitter, and petty, their hearts are still alive in there, and they still love us. So we can think of this most probably clearly with mothers sometimes. You know how mother...
Yes.
how we can be very aware of our mother's flaws. You know, she can be a little controlling. You know, but begin to feel the different layers of what's happening with people. They have their controlling, grumpy self. And then there's this layer here where there's just so much love. And letting ourselves be loved by humans, you know, is quite a task, because we tend to get really alarmed by the little things that people do that give us a sense that we're not really being heard, or that they are not fully acknowledging our autonomous beings. If we begin to sift through that, you know, and feel, okay, those are my mother's or my best friend's strategies. Those are her best strategies. But underneath those strategies, there's that layer of love. And just to let ourselves kind of really feel it, really feel ourselves being loved, even though they do crazy, controlling, petty, bitter things. So, one of the interesting questions to ask that can make you laugh, and it can make people laugh, is you can have somebody who's coming at you and telling you what you should do. I want you should be out there. You should be working. You should be. And you can say to them, do you just love me so much? And are you just so worried about my well-being? And see what happens. Usually they'll go, yes.
That is great. Because I was doing a process not too long ago, a cleanse, and I'd never done one before, and they're not easy, or at least in my case it wasn't. And I remember it was a little bit different, but she kept saying, why are you doing this to yourself? Why are you doing this to yourself? And I actually had to turn to her and say, look, I know I'm grumpy right now. I know I'm going through this, but support me through this, because I know at the end it's going to be. So I want to say, you've got to go both ways. Like, you know, yes, I understand they're grumpy, or they're, you know, pickly, or whatever it is. But it's got to go both ways. If I don't want to maybe stand up for myself as too strong, but if I don't get clear on what's acceptable and not acceptable, and I just sort of allow some of that, I just think that it's got to, the communication has to go both ways. Me giving them plenty of space and grace to be whom they are and however they show up in the world, but also, okay, well, if and when I need to set a boundary, I need to take ownership of that and say, support me in this. Stop criticizing me in this. Support me in this.
And people can experiment. They can experiment with both things. They can see what happens if they say, support me on this, which is such a beautiful request. My whole body relaxes. And you can also try, do you just love me so much? And are you so worried about me? And see what happens with that one, too.
I love that one. I can see that stopping people in their tracks in my world. Just seeing the deer in the headlight moment go on when I say that. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, Sarah, we need to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll take that, and we'll be right back with Sarah Payton. She's an international speaker and facilitator, and her passion, and you can tell her tremendous knowledge base, is about weaving together neuroscience and experiences of healing to unify your brain with your body and also your emotions and the world around you. Oh, she's just amazing. So we'll be back with Sarah in just a moment.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Auto Radio and Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, and we've just spent the first half hour just chatting with the beautiful Sarah Payton, and she is an international speaker and facilitator. Her website is empathybrain.com. Be sure and go over there after our talk here and learn all about Sarah and her work in nonviolent communication, the body-centered explorations of family constellations, oh my goodness, all sorts of great things about understanding how we talk to ourselves. I mean, oftentimes, like myself, I'm a communications trainer, but that's, you know, most of the time external, like talk to each other outside of ourselves. Sarah's an absolute expert in how do we talk to ourselves. And oftentimes I hear people say, you know, I'm told, well, just love yourself. Oftentimes we can get all sorts of knowledge on how to love other people or how to show up in relationships, but some said, just love myself, can be such a strange concept to people, but I know that is central to healing. What are some tips that you have? We've talked about fight, flight, or freeze. We've talked about acknowledging the body, all of that. What are some other tips that you have when this question of worthiness, and when somebody says, well, just love yourself, and you kind of get the deer in the headlights, look and go, well, what does that mean?
Yes. This is one of my favorite questions. And I'll be doing a public workshop up in Vancouver, Canada, in January, early in January, about this very question, a whole Saturday and Sunday exploration of this. First and primary thing that is so important to remember is that the thing that gets in the way of loving ourselves is usually trauma. And this brings us back to this understanding. We're going to bring together two concepts that we have learned already in this half hour that we were together. One is freeze, and one is the timelessness of emotional memory. So one of the things that happens in trauma, one of the key factors of trauma, is that there is some moment of helplessness, that there is some sense that there's no action that we can take that will free us from this moment of trauma. So this means that the things that are traumatic include things like natural disasters, where we're powerless over the movement of the earth or volcano lava or whatever, or high winds, whatever it is, mm-hmm. or that we're powerless in some way with another human being who is harming us is another form of trauma. And that kind of trauma can extend to not only the well-being of ourselves and our own physical bodies, but the well-being of the people and animals that we love. So if we're in a situation where we're seeing someone we love or some animal that we love being harmed or hurt in some way in an accident or in some sort of violence, then there's helplessness for us. So just to acknowledge that this leaves an impact on the brain. The experiences of helplessness leave an impact on the brain. In those moments of freeze, then, the body is completely connected with emotional memory. For our bodies, these moments of trauma are extremely important. We want to be able to avoid such things at all cost in the future. So our body records every detail of the experience of helplessness in order to try to help us continue to survive. And when those experiences are very powerful, they can be very persistent. So we can be living in a state of extended freeze. It's like an ongoing flashback. The experience of not loving the self is often an embedded flashback experience of the moment of frozenness of early trauma. So, for example, you can tell and track this a little bit for yourself by looking at, did you ever like yourself? Like, when you think of your three-year-old self, did you like yourself? People will often say, yes, I like myself as a three-year-old. I love that toddler. That little toddler was so cute. And then you go, okay, do you like yourself as a four-year-old? Sure. Do you like yourself as a five-year-old? No. And you go, okay, something happened between age four and age five. What happened when you were 4.5 years old? What happened when you turned five? Oh, I had to go to school. I had a terrible teacher. Boom. We know there's something here to work with. So just as we're doing no wonder for our bodies, we can, because of this experience of time being permeable for emotional memory, we can actually turn to the four-year-old body, the five-year-old body of ourselves, and go, did that suck? Did being in that classroom really suck? And the little one's going to go, what are you doing here? You know, there's like a, who are you? And you go, I am yourself. I am your grown-up self. I came back for you because this was too hard. Little one goes, I don't know if I trust you. And you go, well, you get to take as long as you want to figure out whether or not you trust me. I'm right here. And the little one goes, yeah, this sucked. You know, so here we have this dialogue, you know, just like we're talking to our bodies in this way. We're talking, and again, no reassurance. We're not saying to this little one, you're going to be okay. No, the little one's like, I'm going to be okay. I'm trapped in this room with this woman who's, you know, torturing me. So there's this dialogue where as people come into these dialogues, then they find themselves, you know, reaching for, with consent, is it okay if I pick you up? Okay. I'll try it. Being reached for, holding their own five-year-old self that lived through this terrible event, and all of a sudden you go, and then you say to them afterwards, "How do you feel about yourself now?" And they go, "Oh, I like myself." It's like the experience of receiving the trauma is so overwhelming for the little child. They blame themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't have any other choice. It's a part of the trauma moment. They're trying to figure out how could they do it differently. They figure that it would be different if they weren't Sarah, right? Or they weren't Todd, or they weren't Jeff, or they weren't Eliana, you know? They're like, it would be better if I weren't myself, obviously. There must be something wrong with me. I will not like myself anymore. This is one of the things that is a cause of people feeling bewildered and like they're a deer in the headlights when you say to them, love yourself. You're there, they're like, what the heck do you mean?
Yes, right? And that question of worthiness often comes up. Somehow, somewhere along those lines, implanted was a lack of worthiness as to who they are and what they, their passions and what they bring, the gifts that they bring into the world. In my opening, I talked a little bit about this idea of hypervigilance, or where people, there's some thought, a school of thought, that autoimmune, a part of that, not the whole thing, but a part of it is where the, I'll just say that hypervigilance, that state when you talked about fight or flight can be ongoing, is turned on, and the switch hasn't been turned off for a long, long time. Is this part where we can go back, and obviously we could do it in ourselves in our meditations. We don't have to seek out a therapist or whatever, but it sounds like it would be great to do it with someone who was trained in it too. But does that work, that to help turn off that hypervigilant state when we go back and talk to the younger versions of ourselves and just find out what was happening to you at three, or what was going on? Bring to my forefront, remind me, you know, here I am, how, you know, five-year-old, how are you doing? What's going on in your world right now? Does that help turn off that hypervigilant switch? Once we bring it to our conscious awareness?
It does help. It's really good to try to do everything, you know, because there are so many levels of body awareness, and there are so many levels at which we can be in that hypervigilant state. Discovering when the hypervigilance began and having a dialogue with the part of the self that originally switched the hypervigilance switch can be very sweet. And being sweet with ourselves, with the very, you know, CELLS, the cells of our bodies, is also, like, there are so many different ways that autoimmune can affect people. So all of the different body systems can be affected with autoimmune. I myself have rosacea. And so one of the things that I can do is just like be really gentle with the cells that have the autoimmune reaction, you know, just like, of course you're inflamed. And I wonder if you need acknowledgement for all the, my rosacea began really intensely when there was a period of great trauma and tragedy in my family over a period of 5 years, which I'm bringing up because we were talking about early childhood trauma. But often the cells can go into a hypervigilant state much later in life in connection with some or another event that was very overloading and stimulating. So we can come to this, whatever cells are most affected, you know, in the context of whatever those events were that occurred right before the beginning of the autoimmune experience. And just bring acknowledgement and gentleness and warmth to whichever cells. It can be the cells of the intestines, you know, with any kind of Crohn's disease or any kind of IBS, for example, or celiac, you know, we can kind of bring to the intestinal cells themselves just love and warmth and acknowledgement and validation. And sometimes it's sweet to even do a little bit of research to whatever cells are being affected, to take a look at what do the healthy cells look like.
Oh, yes, to visualize a healthy cell.
Yeah, and to kind of acknowledge and bring this care and resonance and understanding to the different parts of the body that are affected.
I love that, because in my meditations, it's usually words, and so I love the being able to go, I'll go look up the healthy cells and see what do they really look like. And one of the things that I always use, and maybe you can comment on this a little bit, instead of the word, sometimes people say, oh, just meditate on being normal. And but I, that word never resonated with me. I'm like, eh. So I always say, I want to be in optimal health. I want to be in optimal
thrive
and in prime, and just use these I see in my mind sort of grander words. I was like, I don't really even know what normal is, because sometimes people say, oh well, you know, every day new normal or whatever. I'm like, no, I want optimal. I want awesome health. I want optimal health. These big words type of things that we think about. Oh, my goodness, we're running out of time. Sarah, you and I just always love just this free-form thought processes that we go through to uncover new ways of looking about health and healing and having these experiences where we can understand what's going on for us and move through the other side. I just love that. I recently, let me grab my note here. Recently, someone shared, I wrote it down, I loved it. And I just want your quick comment and then tell us more about how to find out more about you and everything. This person was commenting to me that the word hope was for pessimists and the word faith was for optimists.
Oh, beautiful. Oh.
I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that, because I mean, I like the word hope, but I'm right. It's kind of an unfulfilled word, where the word faith to me seemed to be sort of a fulfilled word. So there again, my word nerdiness is coming out.
It's with faith, there's very much that sense of drawing on our resources, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like it's got a sustained quality of drawing on our resources.
Right. And so I'm having faith that we will all have the ability to move. I'm having faith that we'll move through this, and everybody just being able to come out the other side with whatever it is they're supposed to be learning right now. I mean, just acknowledging what's going on. Yeah. I just love it. But I want to make time to share about the empathybrain.com and more about your work.
Well, just as a bridge between the two, for those listeners who find themselves still a little frozen or alarmed about what the events of November, my latest teleseminar, which is called Gratitude, actually takes, I think, three people through a process of coming out of a freeze, an alarm state in connection with the November election. So if anybody's wanting some resonant healing, go to my website and grab that gratitude teleseminar from the store. My website is www.empathybrain.com. If you're interested in the double binds that stop people from thriving, that's another teleseminar that will be happening on December 20th. So this will go up after that, but then a recording is available. So I'm thinking a lot about the ways in which we make early nervous system contracts with our parents and the important people around us that diminish and stop our life energy from expression. So that's going to be explored in detail on the evening of the 20th Pacific time. And then you had mentioned my book, which is called Your Resonant Self, Guided Meditations and Exercises to Engage Your Brain's Capacity for Healing. And that book will be published in September of 2017 from Norton Publishers.
Well, congratulations, girl. I am so looking forward to that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, such a pleasure to be with you, and I love your work.
Oh, well, thank you, and I love your work in the world, too. I love you, too, my dear. And I'm absolutely so excited about going to your website and listening to those, I guess they're webinars. I'm not sure what word we use them. Teachings?
Webinars, teleseminars.
Teachings, yeah. Whatever we want to call them. Because she just has a plethora of things that if you're fascinated, you can tell Sarah's just a wealth of knowledge. If you're at all been fascinated by anything that she's shared, go to her website. She's got lots of resources there. It's empathybrain.com. And her name is Sarah Payton. So if you can't remember, empathybrain.com, look up Sarah Payton. And thank you, my dear, for being on the show again. It's just been fabulous. I know everyone, sometimes we go tangential when we have Sarah on here. But when you've got a world-class expert, you just kind of go with the flow, right? So everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join me here next week, Friday night, 7 p.m., for another Autoimmune Hour when we explore other things that I found fascinating. I just love the show because I just explore whatever and whomever I find fascinating. And as always, enjoy.
Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift.
This is the EWN Radio Network.